You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I don't know what's going on. I'm euphoric tonight. I don't know if I can't really even explain it. I mean, some nights you just feel it. I keep grinning over here as I say that. But it's a great night tonight here in the Political Cesspool. I don't even really like spring per se, because I know those miserable southern summers are right around the corner with that humidity, 100% humidity, 100 degree weather. I can't stand it. I like it when it's 20 degrees outside. I like an eternal winter. But anyway, I'm happy tonight. What can I say? I am typically gregarious and happy, but I am happy tonight. Maybe that's what it is. Should I announce this to the audience? Keith, you know what it is.
Yes.
Obviously, Sam knows what it is. But should I say it's because my wife is expecting our second child? Can I announce that publicly here for everybody?
Hooray!
Thank you, Roger Devlin, even getting the hooray from our featured guest tonight. So, yes, indeed, it is true, folks. It's too good for the topic at hand. It goes hand in glove. And so, yes, indeed, folks, let me just share with you my good news. We found out just recently that my wife is expecting our second child to be born around Halloween. November 3rd is the due date. In fact, and not just that, ladies and gentlemen, I won't take further ado with this because we have to get back to business here. But my daughter's birthday, we have one child so far, Isabel. Her birthday is on Monday. So I got my daughter turning 4 years old. We got another one in the oven. We'll find out in June if I'm going to sire a son. You know, I need a son to take over the kingdom.
Right.
But whatever it is, I'll love it, and I'll love it unconditionally, and I couldn't be happier with having a girl the first time. Love her to death. But anyway, I have indulged you enough, but that is the big news from the Edwards family. Let's just let the truth be told here.
Keith, you're a very lucky man, Jim.
Well, thank you, Roger. Thank you very much, my friend. And I'm going to let Keith formally introduce you, because we're excited to have you tonight. I say that from the pit of my heart. Excited to have you. I know you were listening earlier, but as I mentioned, I didn't feel as though we gave you enough time on March. I believe it was the broadcast for March 1st or March 2nd. It was a great topic. We're going to get into it intensively tonight. So Keith's going to introduce you, and then we're going to get down to it.
All right.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think that it's too much of an exaggeration to say that Roger Devlin is legendary on the internet. He is the paleoconservative expert on male-female relationships in this age after the triumph of liberalism. Now, to pick up where we left off at the last show, the institution of marriage has been seriously compromised by the sexual revolution. The sexual revolution is as much a part of the triumph of liberalism as the civil rights movement, radical feminism, environmentalism, illegal alien rights, homosexual rights, all of these other things. It's interconnected, but it is probably the least understood aspect of the triumph of liberalism. Roger has done yeoman service in plowing into this and figuring out what has gone wrong. We know a lot has gone wrong with male-female relationships. We have the highest divorce rate ever, the highest illegitimacy rate ever, the highest abortion rate ever, the lowest birth rate for white people ever. What has all caused this, Roger?
All right. Well, last time we spoke a little bit about hypergamy. The problem is essentially this. Most of us conservatives understand that male sexuality is problematic, that men have a wandering eye. We know this. Women know this. And male sexuality, we know, has to be restrained for family life, for monogamy to work. What's often missing from the picture in accounts of the sexual revolution is female sexuality. A lot of times you'll find writers speaking as if, well, men are polygamous and women are monogamous, and we got to get men to behave more like women to make marriage work.
Of course,
now,
that's the premise. Let me just
time.
Interject right here. That's the premise of organizations like Promise Keepers, that we've just got
right.
to beat these men into submission, and women
right.
are naturally good, and
right.
everything
right.
will be hunky-dory if men would just behave themselves.
And there's a gigantic problem with this theory, which is that 70% of divorces are filed by the wife. And even some of the divorces in which the man formally files, it's because his wife wants the divorce. In fact, it's thought that something more like 90% of divorces are done at the instigation of the woman. Sherry Height, who wrote the Height Report on Female Sexuality, estimates that 91% of marriages. Of 91% of divorces, it's the wife who decides. So obviously something is wrong with this view that women are naturally monogamous. But what is it? Well, I call it hypergamy. It's the desire of women to mate with to mate or marry high status men, whoever the highest status man is when she's looking for a father for her baby. And Women may not be interested in one-night stands the way some men tend to be, but that doesn't mean that they're monogamous for life, which is what Christian marriage demands.
Well, they certainly aren't monogamous in the Christian sense, but they're
right. They want one man at a time. They don't want to marry, you know, at any given time. A woman wants one man. But it doesn't remain the same man over the whole course of a lifetime, and that's why you find these pampered women like Elizabeth Taylor and Zsa Zsa Gabor going through 7, 8, 9 husbands.
Let me just say this at that juncture. I remember in the 1950s, after-dinner speakers, a common staple was, like Elizabeth Taylor told to her last husband, "I won't keep you long."
Right, right. Yeah, women appear to be programmed naturally for what I call 4-year stands. 4 years is about the time it takes for courtship, marriage, pregnancy, and for nursing and eventually weaning an infant. That's how much time is usually necessary for one child before you start on the next child. Now, during this time, during the 4-year period, women naturally bond with a particular man, and they are more or less monogamous for that period of time. There's even a chemical basis for this, like hormones. Women typically find that their feelings of infatuation for their man start to fade during the 4th year of marriage. That's when the thrill is gone.
As B.B. King said, the thrill is gone. In the 50s, they used to talk about the 7-year itch.
That's
apparently
right.
It's now been reduced to the 4-year itch. Is that correct?
Apparently, according to the scientists, it's a natural pattern, the 4-year itch, or rather than the 7. And in societies around the world where divorce is legal, it strongly tends to occur in the 4th year of marriage.
Thank you so much, if we'll hold it right there, hold
all
that
right.
thought. We've got to get some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Roger Devlin on this very interesting and timely topic.
It's March into savings time at Veteran-Owned Freeze Dry Guy. Are you prepared to save serious greenbacks before St. Patrick's Day? All Mountain House freeze-dried foods in number 10 cans, meats, entrees, and vegetables are now 20% off only at freezedryguy.com. These are long-lasting foods for emergency preparedness food storage with a guaranteed 25-year shelf life. These are easy foods for your camping, hunting, backpacking, and sailing adventures. These are delicious, nutritious foods, freeze-dried to lock in the taste, aroma, and freshness. And they're all now 20% off only at freezedryguy.com. This Mountain House food discount cannot be applied to other items currently on sale. But as always, you get free shipping from the Freeze Dry Guy within the lower 48 states. For more information, call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD. March into savings, 20% off, now through Sunday, March 16th, only at freezedryguy.com.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211. And take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Thank you, Dale Shannon and Navy Chief Art Frith. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool, everyone. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, and our featured guest for tonight, Roger Devlin. Sex, love, and the political cesspool tonight. We're talking about relationships in the modern day and age. A couple of things, Roger. I agree with you to an extent on the four-year stand thing. I do believe, and I've read the science behind this, there is a chemical in your brain that is triggered when you find someone that you are physically attracted to.
Right.
And that chemical that is released by the brain wanes after 4 years. For instance, I guess you could say when you first meet someone that you're attracted to, it is purely sexual and lust, or not just purely, but primarily that's the initial attraction, and that lasts for so long.
Yeah.
But in my case, and let me just say this, I love women. I always have. What would we do without our women? I have been with my wife since we started dating in 2002, so that's 12 years now. We've been married since 06. And, you know, certainly after 4 years, it evolves into what I would say something more mature. It's not to say that you don't still enjoy one another, because obviously, as I just mentioned, we just, conceived our second child. But it's more than that. And I'd like to ask you to comment on that. But first, I would like to say this as well. Hypergamy. And you write of the desire of women to mate or marry up.
Mm-hmm.
When I was single, I always operated under the idea that there was no one out there that I couldn't get. Now, that's not to say that it was always true, but I always had that confidence. And anyone who has met my wife knows that a little credence has been lended to my theory. She's a beautiful woman, as beautiful now as she ever was.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about feminism and the role that radical feminism plays on mating and selection. But hasn't it always been that way, Roger, or am I wrong? Because if you go back even as far as medieval times or the Renaissance, the ladies in waiting would want to be with King Henry. The people in Rome wanted to be the mistress of the Pope, the Borgia Pope, for instance. I mean, has it always been that way to an extent?
Yes. Marriage, monogamy, is always a compromise between the man's natural tendency to want to be polygamous and the woman's natural tendency to be hypergamous, to want to find the highest quality mate. And after she's finished with the first child, maybe transferring her affections to whoever is the most attractive guy she can get at that point in her life. But, you know, civilization requires that boys and girls have the same mommy and the same daddy in a stable home life, so each sex has to give up a part of what it wants. And the good part is that, at least under monogamy, most people can find somebody. Most people can find someone to marry, which is not the case when you have hypergamous women all forming harems for the king, or the, you know, a few really wealthy guys.
And let me say this, Roger. I think that Christianity is key here too. I think that Western civilization is the highest civilization in the world, and has been in the past, because of Christianity's insistence on the Christian concept of monogamy, one man, one woman. Doesn't matter how much of a big shot you are or think you are, you're just entitled to one wife, just like the poorest hod carrier down the line. Islam, by allowing four wives, is basically making a concession to the alpha males of the Islamic world that they can be special characters and have as many as four wives. And as a result, their civilization did not develop as highly as Western European civilization. At least that's my opinion.
A lot of these Muslim countries, you'll find there are a lot of bachelors running around, and they often become religious fanatics, or they often become involved in crime because they don't have the discipline of having a family to take care of.
Right, and you also pointed out the perversity of female hypergamy, and use as a signal example the fact that women besiege death row criminal inmates with proposals of marriage. Where is that coming from?
That I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask a woman about that. I'd like to talk a little bit about the economic side of marriage maybe next, because it's something that men may be inclined to forget, but our women usually are kind enough to remind us of it. You're not going to get too far, unless you're a death row criminal. You're not likely to get very far with women if you're poor. Now, there's a reason for this. In Africa, it's different. In Africa, women support their men. Women do the farming. They produce all the food. And the men pretty much don't have to do anything, which is what they do.
and they do it well.
Right, yeah. And now our ancestors moved out of Africa into the north, into a harsher climate. And in this climate, you simply couldn't rely on women to produce the food. You needed men to hunt. And after we adopted farming, men had to drive the heavy plows that were used, quite unlike the very simple tools that African women are able to use in the tropics. So marriage has a kind of an economic side as well as a sexual side. I like to define marriage as a lifelong economic and sexual union between a man and a woman. Now, provisioning ability is a crucial dimension of status for European men in particular. I guess we all know that women are attracted to the kind of men who can be good providers. This doesn't mean that they're gold diggers. A true gold digger is a calculating woman, a woman who tries to extract resources out of a man for selfish reasons. But even ordinary good girls are simply like the kind of guys who are capable and who are going to be more able to provide for them. That's not a bad thing. It's even
That's instinctual, you say.
It's instinctual, yeah.
And let me point this out, too, for all the female critics that I have heard of your writings.
Yes.
You leave equal blame at the feet of men. Men aren't naturally monogamous.
Right.
Any more than women are. Men are naturally polygamous, but they're not hypergamous. Women are not naturally monogamous. They're naturally hypergamous. They're not polygamous.
Right. I believe that the sex, that there really is a kind of moral equality of the sexes, but we have, you know, we have different kinds of faults. And the faults of men are generally very well known and widely appreciated, and those of women oftentimes aren't, partly because women can conceal their motives better than men can. The attraction of women to men who are able to provide is not a bad thing. It's even a good thing, since it encourages young men to work hard and to be ambitious when they might, at an age when they might otherwise be concentrating on just having fun and so forth.
Like they do in Africa.
Anyway, among our ancestors in Europe, even before Christianity, the pattern was established of men devoting themselves to provisioning, which means earning a good salary under modern conditions, and women partnering with them and raising children. And raising children is also different among our folks from what it is in among our remote ancestors in Africa. In Africa, women very often give their children over to other family members to raise. They like to concentrate on getting another man to start on the second baby rather than raising their own child. In Europe, once again, this is not really possible. Not only do you need intensive provisioning by men, but you need intensive rearing and nurturance of children by women.
What's called high investment parenting from both parents.
Yes. If you know about Phil Rushton, this is what he calls the R and the K strategy. Some, like Africans, have many children and don't devote as much time to them, but Europeans have fewer children and invest very heavily in them. That's the way of our people.
Hold that thought, if you would, please, Roger. We've got to break once more for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back again with Roger Devlin after these words from our sponsors.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, and our featured guest for the night, F. Roger Devlin, talking about relationships in the modern age. We're going to talk about the effect that feminism has had.
Yes.
In a moment, but no rush. We still have two full segments remaining, and I'm going to toss it over to Keith. But certainly to an extent, I guess you could say that tens have always mated with tens, fives with fives, so on and so forth. But would you agree with that, Roger, as we continue on with the economic side of mate selection and marriage?
Yes, that's right.
Let me say this, Roger, if I could. When we talk about hypergamy, you have to talk about the phenomenon that is commonly known today as alpha males.
Okay? Right.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, that's right. The men who are the, I guess you would call them the tens.
And basically, because of the reproductive imbalance between males and females that you point out at the beginning of your Sexual Utopian Power article, that women create 400 eggs in a lifetime, where men create 12 million sperm an hour.
Yeah.
Men are vastly oversupplied. So consequently, that means that there's a difference in mating strategies between males and females. Females, alpha females, for example, the tens, like Bo Derek, they tend to link up with alpha males, and almost exclusively alpha males, depending on how they define alpha male. Money, power, sexuality, whatever, je ne sais quoi, as the French say, whatever it is. But on the other hand, male alphas, the tens, will go to the eights, nines, ten, it's sevens, sixes, five, fours, three, twos, and ones, because they are so vastly oversupplied with sexual reproductive capacity. Is that a fair or an unfair statement?
That's right. Under monogamy, the ten will go with the ten. But under, when monogamy
breaks down
apart and you have a hypergamous and polygamous mating pattern, Mr. 10 will mate with Miss 10, Miss 9, Miss 8, Miss 7. And maybe only half as many girls will be there for all the other guys. So there's not a girl for every guy under that system.
And furthermore, let me just say this. Women seem to have the expectation that if a male mates with them, that they should marry them. But the number 10 male, the alpha male, can't marry all the women that want him.
That's
right. And if monogamy and the institution of marriage as traditionally understood in the West, Christian marriage, doesn't control his behavior, he's going to be a playboy, and there are going to be a lot of scorned women, and we all know that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right?
That's right. These women, a lot of times, they get angry at men in general. They decide that men are pigs and they just don't like men. When now this number 10 guy, he may be a creep, but part of the problem, maybe even most of the problem, is simply that there aren't enough of these guys to go around. It's ultimately better off for all concerned if he picks his one wife and the
takes himself out of the game.
The rest of the women are forced to choose among the other nine instead of him.
Right. And, of course, there is a whole genre of literature, like harlequin romances and pulp romances, where the whole dramatic tension is how does the female princess get the alpha male to, quote-unquote, commit to her.
Right.
And this is a great mystery to women.
You know.
Just like for men, the great mystery is, why do these alpha males, what is it that they have that I don't have, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the romance fiction accounts for something like half of all the books sold, so they say. It's a huge phenomenon, and it sure as heck is not Christian monogamy.
Well, Roger, that being said, I'd like to go back to your outline. You were one of the few guests that actually provide an outline, and it really helps.
Oh,
let me tell you, I'm serious. Yeah. It really helps, and I appreciated it. Okay. It was actually your outline today when I received it via email that prompted my decision to extend you from 30 minutes to a full hour, and I think that was the right choice. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the economic side of mate selection and marriage and some points that you didn't cover in the previous segment that you would like to cover before we have to move on.
Sure. So I think we just about got to the point where I was explaining why it is that among Europeans there's a strong sexual division of labor. The man concentrates on provisioning and protecting the family sometimes, and the woman concentrates on her children, investing heavily in the education of the children, bringing them up very carefully and very strictly, And this is one of the things that has made European civilization great. Children get a lot of attention, a lot of unhurried attention from their mothers.
And, you know, we are always hearing about how we need to close the achievement gap between white and non-white children in academics. And what you're telling us basically is that it seems to be patterned in our genes that white people engage in high investment parenting where it's something new to non-white groups. Is that
right,
a fair statement?
Yes. Africa, for example, which is an important example because it's, ultimately it's where we came from. They have a different way of doing it. They're very lackadaisical. They it's called fostering. They give the children to a cousin to bring.
Well, that you see that in places like Memphis with a majority black population all the time, children being raised by collateral relatives, aunties, for example.
Right.
Rather than the biological father and the biological mother.
America actually did a pretty good job of teaching black people to follow the European model through about the 1950s until a lot of wrong-headed social policy was introduced. And when that happened, the African mating and marriage pattern just came roaring back and created.
And it's now celebrated by none other than Hillary Clinton, who has written a book about it called It Takes a Village, right?
Yeah, as if we should take African villages as our model for how to raise our children. Well, let me talk a little bit about the kind of world that we created here. Within living memory, you can probably remember this, Keith, a young man of completely average abilities with only a high school diploma, but an honest young man willing to work, could get a job that would allow him to save up some money to put aside money for a family nest egg. Now, it's not all jobs that paid like that. There were women's jobs and kids' jobs and older people's jobs that were part-time and paid lower. But jobs that young adult men got typically paid what was called a family wage, the wage that a family provider had to have to adequately provide for his family. So after a few years out of high school, a young man might be able to buy a small freestanding house and a car, get married, eventually father three or four children whom his wife would stay at home and raise full time, and they could go to the seashore maybe 2 weeks a year, and this is what was called the American dream.
Right.
The wonderful thing about America is this was available to ordinary people, not just the specially favored. And
Roger.
Then came feminism.
All right, and we're going to get to that in depth in the last segment of this hour, I know, but I had stepped out of the studio for just a moment. I believe we have a caller on the air. And we have a caller right here from Memphis. So, Memphis, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Yes, this is Walker in Memphis, and I just wanted to ask Roger Devlin a question.
Go ahead.
Roger?
Yes.
I'd just like to know, what are your academic credentials?
Oh, well, I have a PhD. I studied philosophy, and I published my dissertation in the form of a book that you can get on Amazon under my name. And I taught for a couple of years, but it's hard for a person with views like mine to do very well in the American Academy, so I just walked away from it, and now I'm a freelance writer, editor, and translator.
Where did you do your undergraduate work?
Oh, well, I was very fortunate in that respect. I went to St. John's College in Annapolis, which has what they call the Great Books Program. So,
right. I'm familiar with St. John's Program.
Yeah.
And what area did you concentrate on in your graduate studies?
Philosophy. I have a doctorate in philosophy, academic philosophy.
And can you tell us what institution?
Well, I don't like it to make it too easy for Heidi and Mark to follow what I'm doing, so I don't give out information that could identify me. But it's a well known institution in the American South.
All right. Well, we're going to get back to Roger Devlin, and we're going to enter into feminism and the role it's played in all of the topics we have been discussing this evening. Right after this,
stay
tuned, everybody,
and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Back to get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. This has been a quick hour. This hour has gone by far too quickly with Roger Devlin as our guest, and we're going to enter into the age of feminism and what role feminism has played on these topics that we have been discussing for the last hour. But first, I know Keith wants to make a comment.
Yeah, regarding the last caller, let me tell people that the position here at the Cesspool is that you don't need to be a PhD or have any special credentials to be an expert. Even though Roger does. For example, Benjamin Franklin didn't have a PhD, but he was an expert in a lot of things. Obama has no particular academic credential, not a PhD. He has a law degree, but never really practiced law, but he's considered an expert. And, of course, the ultimate expert of all time, Jesus Christ, of course, had no degree of any type. So, consequently, we believe in the marketplace of ideas, and you're welcome to contest somebody's expertise or their arguments, but we just talk in terms of the argument itself. Let, you know, deal with the arguments, don't deal with the window dressing of degrees and things like that. So, getting back to the topic of male-female relations as affected by the sexual revolution of the 60s and what has happened to them since then, we know what's happened. Rampant divorce, rampant abortion, rampant illegitimacy. What brought this about?
I think, well, I think I got up to the point I was explaining the old family wage system under which children had mothers who paid full-time attention to them, and men were able to get jobs that could support not only themselves but also their stay-at-home wives and their children. A lot of us think it was a pretty good system. It was in accordance with the European tradition of the sexual division of labor. But there are a few women who were not happy with this. They didn't like the natural role of being wives and mothers, and preferred to adopt the male role and compete in the world outside the home. They didn't want children because they thought children would tie them down, and they thought that raising children was a thankless and a presumably unimportant task. This is a minority of women. Fortunately, most women are not like this, but a few are.
And they were the leaders, right? We have people like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem said that, you know, people that were totally atypical, leading supposedly a movement that represents all women.
Right. Betty Friedan wrote that book in the early 60s, telling women that the kind of home I just described was this is her words, a comfortable concentration camp for women.
And isn't it remarkable that most of these leaders were also Jewish?
She was Jewish, and she was a communist also. Yes, in America, most of the feminist leaders have been Jewish, though the movement has European roots, unfortunately. There are some women of this type in I guess, all races.
But on the other hand, these are not typical women. This was not a grassroots movement. Would you agree?
No, it feminism. Was not at all. In fact, it didn't even really get started in a big way until the 80s, that women were entering the workplace in very large numbers. Let's look at what happens then. First of all, you have women competing against men instead of partnering with them. And this is very important. When women start to work, the market is glutted with labor, which causes the price of labor to go down. That means wages. With more people working, everybody's wages go down. And as a result, the same job on which a man formerly raised a family could no longer provide a family wage. With lower wages, the woman has to work outside the home to provide the same income the family had before with just the man working.
And, of course, this diminishes what the man traditionally brought to the relationship, which was enhanced earning power. So now the man is on a par with the woman. The woman's natural hypergamous instincts will find him lacking because of changes totally beyond his control, right?
That's right. Man, first of all, the man loses his own self-respect. He's not happy because he's no longer being a good provider as nature causes him to want to be. And the woman finds the man less attractive and may become resentful. I mean, it's not an accident that the success of the feminist movement coincided with a lot of anger directed against men. But it's really for things that are, outside of men's control. Men never wanted women entering the workforce to compete against us. We were quite happy. Men enjoy providing for their families. It's the way we're built.
Well, see, I have seen in my own experience how this plays itself out. I've noticed a lot of women who married men who were totally unobjectionable by any rational standard. They paid all the bills. They never missed a house note, never missed a car note, never missed a private school tuition bill.
Yeah.
But their wife, particularly in the age of affirmative action, would get preference for government jobs, judgeships,
yes,
whatever, and then she would find that she had quote unquote outgrown her husband and
yes,
ditch him. Okay.
Oh yes. Yes.
And this
marriage
is common.
Tends not to last very long when the woman's making more money than the man.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That's
and,
what happens.
So yeah, first you have women entering the workforce and competing, and then above and beyond that, you have actual preferences instituted by feminists to favor women in the workplace over men so that women are earning more, and that completely messes up traditional European courtship and marriage. It just can't work that way. Also, of course, the children suffer. Assuming any of them manage to get born, they're getting much less attention from their mother, who's always exhausted. And they become what you call latchkey children, or they're raised by the television set and the video game console instead of a mother. And
Bad results.
The only people who benefit from this system are, first of all, the capitalist, because he's getting more work for the same amount, twice as much work for the same amount of money. And secondly, the tax collector, because he has two incomes to tax instead of one. Wages for men have been pretty much flat in America since 1973, while women's have continued to rise to get closer and closer to those of men.
And, you know, talking about hypergamy and its effects, you know, and the four-year cycle, if you stay in the relationship for 4 years and have a child, then suddenly you are targeted by what you call the divorce industry, and
right,
you will be you'll find out that Mr. Lincoln didn't free all the slaves if you're a man, right?
Right. Debtor's prison. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to support your own cuckolding.
Yes, yes. Your money goes not it's called child support, but it doesn't actually have to be used to support the children. It can be used by the woman to send herself on a vacation,
or go to the health spa or whatever.
Right, or shared with her adulterous new husband.
Paramour or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, see, this is, I'm old enough to remember back in the day when you had fault divorce, and it didn't matter whether it was a man or the woman at fault. If you were the adulterer, they would lay the wood on you in divorce court.
Yeah.
If you were the non-supporter, if you were the person who deserted the marriage, you
right,
would be punished. And now, with the advent of no-fault divorce, which was another triumph of liberalism that is often overlooked by conservative critics of liberalism, that was as important a milestone on the highway to hell as any, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. It punishes the responsible party who wants to make the marriage work. It favors the irresponsible party who wants to leave. Usually the woman, as I say.
Well, Roger, let me ask you this. And Keith, you can confirm if I am correct or mistaken in my assumption here. Is it, am I correct in the knowledge that Roger is to be back with us again next week? Is that all right? Yes. So, Roger, I do believe you will be our guest again next week, which is a good thing because we have less than a minute remaining this hour.
All right.
The third and final hour, folks, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, who just walked into the studio, and yours truly will be talking about the latest developments, many of which have occurred since our last time with you a week ago tonight in Russia, Ukraine, and Crimea. So stay tuned for that in the third hour. But Roger will be back with us next week to wrap up at least this current segment on... We will have him for as long as he wants. Yes, indeed, we will, because this is something certainly that we can all relate to. But he will be back with us at least one more week, and that will be next week before we get into April's Confederate History Month series, which is going to be dynamite, folks. I'm telling you, we have lined up some great guests in the month of April to celebrate Confederate history. But Roger, that being said, the final 30 seconds to you, my friend, and then we will reconnect with you a week from tonight.
Well, I'll just make one more point. One of the favorite things that feminists like to say is that we cannot turn back the clock. We cannot go back to the days when mothers stayed at home with their children and fathers supported them. As a matter of fact, it's something that has already happened. Historians say that in Belgium in the 19th century, women were working outside the home, and then people decided, hey, this isn't right. We got to have women staying home with their children. And there was a massive movement of women out of the workplace and back to the home because that's what people wanted. And it's something that can happen in America if we
Roger,
want it.
We'll pick up on that thought next week, so stay tuned for more from Roger Devlin next week here on the Political Cesspool. Thanks to Keith Alexander tonight for his incredible contributions. Stay tuned, folks. The third and final hour coming up with me and Eddie the Bombardier Miller.